Clinton. You can find it on the Hunterdon Chamber website. We've got different speakers and breakout sessions, and the theme this year is Mythbusters. So you've heard of the imposter syndrome and different things like that. We've got different speakers to address those issues and empower you, and please join us. It's always a great day of networking and inspiring speakers. All right, today I'm very excited to welcome Annika Fornazzani. Welcome, Annika.
Thank you, Nicole. It's exciting to be here.
Great. Well, she is the founder and president of Language Lizard, and Language Lizard works with educators, librarians, and bilingual families to support language learning and multicultural education, and they provide books and resources in 50 different languages.
That's right. And it's great to be here on this radio show because we work with a lot of schools and libraries and bilingual families in New Jersey and in Hunterdon County. So it's nice to be able to connect in a different way to our customers and people that we support.
Right. And if people want to go online and check out your website, languagelizard.com, you're on all the social media, so they can, if they want to look along while they're hearing us talk, why don't you talk about the foundation of the company and the mission of the company, Language Lizard.
Okay. Well, the mission of Language Lizard, we kind of have a couple pillars of our mission. Primarily, it's to celebrate diversity and to promote multicultural education. We also do work to support the academic and social development of English language learners and promote the maintenance of home or heritage languages. So make sure people are keeping their home languages. And then an additional pillar is just giving back to the community, because that's very important to us, as you know about our company.
Yes, and why don't we talk, we'll back up a little bit, and I want to talk a little bit about your background, because you're not, you didn't create this company out of a vacuum, because you've got bilingual in your blood, because you're yes. heritage from Europe, and then you've lived in Japan, and you've done all these kinds of things, so you've definitely, you're qualified to have started this company and share this message.
Yeah, well, that is one thing that's, I guess, a continuous line through pretty much everything I've done, I suppose, since birth, because my first language was actually Dutch. My parents immigrated from Belgium, and I guess in some sense lived the American dream. And so they moved here, initially thinking they'd move back, but ended up staying in the U.S. So I have lived here most of my life, except for some of the time that I worked in Japan. But pretty much throughout my years of schooling, I was always interested in other cultures, other languages. My father's actually a professor, so when we grew up, we didn't have a lot of family around. So when it was Thanksgiving, he would invite the students that didn't have someplace else to go, let's say. So we had gatherings where we had, you know, people from South America and from Asia and from various parts of Europe. And so it was always a very multicultural Thanksgiving. So I suppose that's part of why it's in my blood. And then I always loved learning languages. And as you mentioned, I went to Japan. I had studied some Japanese, so I did have the opportunity a few times to go to Japan for short stints and then eventually to actually work there for 3 years. So yeah, that's been something, and continued those studies through graduate school, etc. So that's been, as you say, in my blood.
Yes, and I love also what you did, and that you've had this incredible education and this incredible background and upbringing, and then you were doing the corporate thing and chugging away and doing some wonderful things, but then you kind of had an aha moment where you said, hey, I want to do something different, and you had this idea, and then you started it, and then, so kind of take us through how Language Lizard was born.
Okay. So, yes, I did, my initial jobs out of college were more in, say, the corporate world. I did some strategy consulting. I worked in technology companies. But interestingly, even if you look at all those jobs, they all had an international component. So, for example, when I was doing strategy consulting in Japan, we did a lot of work with helping companies that wanted to enter the Japanese market. And those were companies not just necessarily from America, but from other places. And so I was kind of the English-speaking connection to all of that. All of my colleagues were Japanese. And then when I worked in telecommunications, I actually had opportunities to work with not only do international negotiation and work in different countries, but also actually had the opportunity to work with communities in the U.S., like the Russian community, the Polish-speaking community, the Arabic-speaking community. And so all of that, while at the time I never knew what that might lead to, definitely played a part in how Language Lizard was formed. And actually, before I started Language Lizard, when I was still working in the corporate world, I always loved children's books. And I kind of got more involved with children's books in part because I just wanted to do something fun and creative that was outside of my day-to-day job. So I took some classes with the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. I took some local classes about that. And I just got kind of involved in children's books for fun. But then I always, you know, I'm always reading about the, you know, changes in immigration and changes what's happening to this country, and I was doing a lot of reading about the importance of literacy and having a rich literacy environment for kids. So I think now it's pretty much people know it's very important to start reading to your kids early. Though there's been research that's shown you read to them a lot when they're young. It helps them in their school success going forward, you know, even through high school and beyond. But then there was also this body of research coming out about that time, which was really showing that for second language learners, so say all the English language learners in this country who grow up in homes that speak a language other than English, it was actually very important for them, A, to have a literacy-rich environment also growing up, but also the research was showing that building their literacy skills even in their home language would help in the development of their second language. So there's a lot of literacy skills that transfer from the first language to the second language. So whereas for a long time people were thinking, well, you know, if we want the person to learn English and maybe they're from a Gujarati-speaking home, well, you know, we don't want to confuse the kid and let's just try to do as much English and in a sense almost have them lose that home language and that heritage language. And that was a very, very common idea that let's just, you know, focus on the English and focus less on the home languages. But as this research has come out, there's been much greater recognition that really what's important is reading to the kid. And if the parent's home language is something other than English, then read in that home language. And the kid will, that really, the studies have shown that really will improve their second language learning. So I read about that, you know, fascinating stuff. But then a part of me, and this was again as I'm doing, working on children's books for fun, there was a part of me that was saying, well, you know, that research is great, but, you know, I've worked now with communities. Like I said, I'd worked with the Russian, Arabic, Polish community, and I said, but I wonder how much is really out there for these communities. So I started to do some research. I looked in libraries. I just looked at all what was available, and I realized that there's not a whole lot available. Now there's a lot more in Spanish. At the time, there were some things in Spanish. But if you kind of went outside of the Spanish market, there was very, very little available. And so some of these communities, yes, no, none of these communities, none of these immigrant communities are as big as the Spanish-speaking community in the U.S., but there are some big pockets of these communities. So here we're telling them, read in your home language. That's going to help your kids succeed in school, but we're not giving them anything to do that with. So that really was the impetus of Language Lizard, is saying let's try to let's make these resources available for speakers of other languages. And, you know, we grew over time, and as you said, now we have over 50 languages. I'm super excited because we have some new languages that we're going to be adding most likely later this year in 2020. So it's really exciting. And as we've added, you know, we started with primarily children's books, and then we had some posters and resources. But over the years, we've also added a lot of audio resources so kids or adults can hear the stories both in English and in their second language. And then we've been developing other resources to help teachers use these children's books in their teaching.
That's a lot. You've done a lot. I love the story. I love your background. It fits. And I love the fact that you said you basically turned your, not your side hustle, but your hobby and your love into a business, which I think is what everybody would love to have that story or love to be able to do that. And you've done it and you're an example of it. So kudos to you. But we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. And today we are talking with Annika Forzani. She is the president and founder of Language Lizard. You can find them on all social media, languagelizard.com. And they provide bilingual books, multicultural education, resources for teachers, families, all kinds of great stuff. And she's talking about how she turned a fun hobby into a business and started it 15 years ago. So
yes, April is our 15th anniversary.
Yeah, so exciting. And you've got a lot of things going on to celebrate that anniversary. One big thing, which is another, like you've got children, but I think this was another baby that you birthed with your book. So tell us about your book and what it's all about.
Yes. So I came out with a book in December, just this past December 2019, and it's called Building Bridges with Bilingual Books and Multicultural Resources. And it really is the culmination of a lot of work that we have done. So I told you about how we, you know, came in and we wanted to make the resources and these bilingual books available in so many different languages to reach these, you know, different families and help teachers who work with these with diverse students.
Yeah, one of the cool things I want to say though is that these books in 50 languages, the books are all in both languages. They're in the native language and English, right?
Which is yes. Thank you for clarifying that because yes, so all of the books have English and a second language, and actually that's something that's really been great for teachers because many times the teachers who are working in diverse classrooms, if they're lucky, maybe they will speak one of the other languages of the classroom, but often there's kids in those classrooms that don't speak the other languages, and so often what they'll do is I really promote creating lending libraries. So they will, for example, read a book in English in their classroom, and then they'll have perhaps that same book that the kid can take home and read in the language, the home language with their parents. So this is also tying in parents into the classroom. So English speakers can use these books, second language speakers can use the books, etc.
And everybody can be on the same page.
And everybody, literally.
Yeah, I know, right? And now you've got this other book that expands that.
Yes. So the book we created in December was really more of a teacher's guide, a teacher's manual. And how I came to that is years ago, I want to say it was maybe about 12 years ago or so, I connected with a professor from Westchester University in Pennsylvania, and she was a professor in their Department of Education, and she actually approached me initially. She had seen what we were doing with all these bilingual books, and she said, you know, I have a lot of teachers that I work with now, many of whom were trained. So she works with a lot of master's students who are coming back. So they have teaching experience coming back, and she also trains undergraduates who want to go into education. But what she found is that a lot of teachers have been trained in education, but they hadn't necessarily been trained in how do you work with diverse classrooms. And with the increasing diversity, there were teachers who perhaps had almost no diversity when they started teaching, and suddenly, you know, 20%, 30%, sometimes more of their class were kids from other cultures. And they want to do the right things. They want to create a welcoming classroom, but they maybe didn't have the resources who didn't know how to do that. So she said, you know, so she and I talked a lot. She looked at these bilingual books. She said, you know, these are great tools to help build multicultural classrooms and promote diversity in the classroom with the idea of not just integrating and including more the second language speakers or the immigrant children, but also to teach all children about the different cultures. And so what we started to work on together and with some of her students was we started to build multicultural lesson plans, where we would develop lesson plans that literally a teacher can just take and use. There's, you know, background information, there's information about what standards they're meeting, there's questions to ask, you know, literal questions, evaluative questions, inferential questions, how do you assess, there's extension activities, etc. So it's a very detailed lesson plans. And so we began developing these with various themes. And I will say that the majority of them are actually all available for free on our website. So if there's any teachers listening, this is something you can get for free on our website. There's a big box on our website that says free resources. Click on that.
LanguageLizard.com. Yeah.
LanguageLizard.com. Click on the red box that says free resources, and it will take you to a page where you can sign up to get all of those multicultural lesson plans. So we had been working on that for a number of years, so you'll see quite a few lesson plans on the website. But then we decided that we wanted to do a little something more than that. And so we started working on this book. And I will say it's been a time coming. I've been working on it for a good 2 years at least. And what we were doing here is really building on that. We got a lot of great feedback on those lesson plans. So we said, let's do something. We're putting out a book that's really going to support teachers in what we call culturally responsive teaching. And so what we're doing is we're providing lesson plans, very specific lesson plans with various themes. There's themes about cultural diversity, themes about folktales and fables, themes about various holidays, all that they can incorporate in the classroom. There's information about what standards those lesson plans are meeting. And so it's really the teacher can pick it up. They have the lesson plans. But in addition to this, we said, well, what else can we add to this book that's going to help a teacher build a multicultural classroom? And we added a whole bunch of diversity activities, games from around the world, foods, crafts from around the world, games that you can play with bilingual books to help build literacy. All the lesson plans also incorporate accommodations for language learners, extension activities. How could you maybe take a lesson plan that has to do with a book and literacy and take that into the math classroom, for example? And there's ways to do that, and we provide some of those ideas. So it's really supposed to be a resource to start to make it easier. And that's really a big area we're moving into. So as we continue to offer the children's books, we want to continue to offer ways that you can use these books to help build multicultural or culturally responsive classrooms.
Wow. That's incredible.
A lot of information.
I know, but it's all good. Well, and I think to boil it down, or what I'm hearing is that, so, you know, some of the kids that are from other places or other cultures, they want to fit into the American classroom, which is great, but it's also very beneficial for typical American kids to learn about other cultures. And so, and there's a lot of common ground, right? So, I mean, every culture has a version of bread, or, you know, I mean, there's a lot of similarities, and you can celebrate the similarities and the differences, and everybody wins.
Right? Exactly. And that's a big, so one of the term you might have heard me put out here is a culturally responsive classroom, right? So what are you doing when you're developing a culturally responsive classroom? What you're really trying to do is incorporate culture in sort of all aspects of learning. And in doing so, trying to build a welcoming and inclusive classroom where every student feels welcome and safe and respected, diversity of opinions are shared, diversity of experiences are shared. And so there's a big push to do that. Students feel valued, they feel proud of their heritage instead of trying to hide their heritage. But one of the elements, and there's a few elements to think about when you're doing a culturally responsive classroom, and you kind of touched on one, you know, where you're trying to get kids to learn about other cultures. And yes, a lot of these immigrant kids want to be sort of maybe, you know, they want to fit in, right? But as a teacher, there's sort of a balanced approach. Obviously, you don't want to come in with negative assumptions of any kind of immigrant culture, but you also don't want to be colorblind, right? So you don't want to go in and say, oh, we're all the same, right? And instead you want to say, hey, there are differences. Let's explore some of these differences. Let's look at them. Let's accept them. Let's understand them. And so, you know, by doing so, kids are, again, starting to feel proud that their culture is being talked about and represented, and maybe language is being brought in, and you're talking about some of the languages in that classroom, and they're really feeling welcome. Another part is just bringing parents into the classroom. So we always say parents are, you know, parents are the experts on their culture, right? So, you know, more and more teachers are finding ways of bringing parents in. And it may be that you're learning about some holidays like, you know, Diwali or Eid, Ramadan, etc. And you could bring in somebody from that culture. And maybe they can read a book and kids can hear that language. Again, with the bilingual books, you could read, have the parent read it in their language. And the teacher reads it in English. So by involving them, again, we know that parental involvement in the classrooms is very helpful and is very useful. Sometimes that doesn't work. Sometimes the parents aren't comfortable coming into the classroom. But again, with this idea of lending libraries and bringing things home that are in their language, it's amazing the response we get to when it's really truly amazing the response for some of these parents who are new to this country and are not expecting that a teacher is going to give a book in their language, you know, for the kid to take home and read with their parents and talk with their parents. And the feedback, it's really heartwarming when you do get the feedback from the parents or from the teachers as well.
Right, and I think it's so appropriate they're here today and this week because it's, you know, Dr. Seuss and Read Across America, mm-hmm. and there's all kinds of stuff going on. And I think you said in your book you've got calendars or specific activities and things that people can do around different multicultural celebrations that go on throughout the year. So do you want to talk about a few of those, like Multicultural Children's Book Day?
So we are, there's some great holidays. And certainly anyone that has to do with reading or literacy, I say go for it. Read as much as you can. But there's ones where, again, the idea with this bringing in multiculturalism is you're still meeting school standards. You know, you're doing all that. You're just doing that with a cultural lens. And so, for example, coming up next week, starting March 15th, I think, is World Folktales and Fables Week. So everybody loves to teach kids about world folktales and fables. Everybody loves folktales and fables. You know, you get the good versus the evil, you know, how cunning and smarts can help win the day. So there's a great sort of morals and themes in world folktales and in folktales and fables, period. So now let's just say, hey, let's look at that, but let's look at some world folktales and fables. Because now, on top of some of the moral lessons, we can start learning about a culture. And so, you know, we have some great ones. So, for example, we've got a book, Ye Xian, A Chinese Cinderella. So, great, let's learn about this Cinderella story. But actually, this story, some believe, is the original telling of the Cinderella tale. So now we can take that and we can also learn a little bit about Chinese culture and China. You know, we have a book about the giant turnip, which is a adaptation of a Russian folktale, which is the enormous turnip. In other folktale, Bury in the Marrow. You know, they're great stories. They're great stories. And so it's a great time to bring that. It's an easy way to bring culture in. Let's celebrate World's Folktales and Fables Week.
Yeah, and I think that stories are just great, period. And we're going to talk about this in a minute, but everyone knows that I volunteer for Room to Read. And when I tell them that Room to Read publishes books in the native languages of other countries, they're like, oh, you mean you just take all the Dr. Seuss stories and translate them into... like, No. I mean, all these other cultures and countries and people in all parts of the world, they all have like stories that have been passed down verbally and through generations, and they have their own stories. We don't need to, you know, copy our stories over there. They've got rich... It's just, but they haven't put them in books before. Because they didn't have publishing houses and the means and whatever, so there's just an endless supply of stories that can just expand your world and your knowledge. And
exactly,
yeah, it's very fun. I mean, we all love our favorites, but it's always
right. And we do. And to be fair, you know, not everything we have. Some of the stories we have, for example, we do have Goldilocks and the Three Bears. You know, everybody loves that story. But now, hey, it's available in maybe 25 different language editions now. So let's take that fable and let's, even if it's a standard fable, maybe it's not multicultural, but now we can look at a different language when we look at that book, and we can start learning about different languages. So there's a lot of ways to incorporate that. So, yeah, that's a holiday we love to celebrate. Another big one that we celebrate is in October is celebrating the Bilingual Child Month, which of course is completely about, you know, what we're about. And the idea there is there are a lot of kids who are really working hard to learn a second language. And, you know, some are the English language learners and the dual language learners here in our communities. But other kids who are maybe native English speakers who are working hard to learn a second language. But what we want to do is celebrate that and promote that, because we really don't want people to lose these home languages, these heritage languages. I mean, just looking globally as a country, why would we not want to support that we have? I mean, we have, our country has over 400 different languages. There's huge numbers of Arabic speakers, Chinese speakers, etc. Well, in terms of thinking ahead of global diplomacy or just, you know, global trade, like, let's make sure that people are getting these languages. New Jersey's actually been great with that. They now initiated a seal of biliteracy. So high school kids, both English language learners as well as native English speakers, can get a seal of biliteracy. So again, it's something they can add to their resume, their work resume, their resume for college or whatnot. And some other states are following suit with that as well. So I think I love that, because what we're really trying to do is, as I said, one of the missions was to make sure that we're not losing home and heritage languages that and the strengths that already exist.
Right, and talking about high school kids, and I know kids, you know, a lot of parents are like, well, they need to be excellent in a sport, and they need to be proficient in an instrument, and they, you know, kids are overwhelmed today anyway, but I think language wasn't one of those premier ways, areas of focus, but I think there's research out there, again, that talks about how great for the brain learning another language is, and that's a whole other thing to open up, so I love the seal of biliteracy or bilingualism.
Yes, exactly, exactly. People have to see all the benefits of bilingualism. You know, sometimes people look at all the challenges of having, you know, English language learners, et cetera, in the classroom, and how are we going to handle this? But there's really just a lot of benefits of bilingualism. So,
yeah, no, and you're bringing it home. You're providing the resources. Yeah, we can back up a little bit and talk more about the missions of the company, like, and how that fits into your plan for, you know, 15 years and beyond, and what you've got going in the works.
Yeah, well, we have a lot of exciting things. So, well, I really want to encourage people to, if they go on our website, there's a little box that pops up, they can sign up for our newsletter. And I really want to encourage people to sign up for that, because we have a lot of really exciting things coming up in terms of teacher resources, really fun new books, new opportunities as well. And actually, we are, in part because of this, anybody who signs up today will get our next newsletter, and we were going to give away a free chapter, a free lesson plan from our book. So that's one incentive to do that. And then we also have been running giveaways, so people can sign up for that as well and potentially win free bilingual books. So we're doing a lot of different initiatives. But like I said, one of our big things that we're trying to do is to create more resources to help teachers help the students and help teachers build the culturally responsive classrooms and find ways to incorporate diversity.
Mm-hmm. Who are your primary clients, would you say? It's schools, libraries, right?
Yes. Yeah, so libraries, schools, many literacy organizations, refugee organizations that are trying to provide resources, bilingual families as well that are trying to maintain the home language. And then another thing that we do that, you know, we love to do is, and this gets into sort of the helping out, which is part of the mission of your show here, right, is we love to work with corporations as well. So we have done some work with corporations where, in a sense, working together with them to help give back. So as an example, we worked with a large company that was sort of a medical software company, and they had a big conference in Nashville, and they wanted to do something for that community, for the Nashville community, talk to the school district, and the school district was kind of saying, you know, we have a lot of language learners, and net is that we worked with them to help get, I think it was 3,000, 4,000 books in Spanish, Arabic, Kurdish languages to their students. So all these kids got a free book. You know, they added some pencils and some other things, but they all got free books. We were able to add the logo of the company on it. So that, you know, so that there was some corporate branding and they knew that that corporation was involved in the giving back. But we love to work with companies to help find ways to, you know, meet, there's just so many needs in the community, and we're a small company. We can't do it, you know, we can only do so much. But if we can work with other companies to help meet various needs, particularly in the field of education, literacy, multiculturalism, we love to do that.
Well, yeah, it's a win-win-win because you've got a company that wants to give back and doesn't know how, so they're able to provide the resources, and then you're facilitating the partnership between the school system, which doesn't have the resources, but they need the books.
They need the books.
And so it's a win-win-win all the way around. So I think that's becoming more and more popular, and I think anytime, because a lot of times a lot of these companies will brand like pens or, you know, glass cleaners or notepads, which are great. We can all use that. But when you're branding something that a kid's going to use every day and that it's, that's the way to go in my mind.
Yes. And exactly. And this is another example of, you know, the feedback I got after that event was like, you know, here you have so many families that really and sometimes maybe aren't feeling as much part of the wider community and whatnot. And suddenly you're saying, here, you know, we see you. We respect your language. You know, we value your culture. And here's just a small token of that. And that really, I think, makes a difference.
Absolutely. That's golden.
Yeah.
Well, and we talked before, do you want to share any other stories that stick out in your mind from customers or families or people that have given you feedback or that you've worked with that, you know, because everyone's got their favorite stories of like, right. Oh my gosh, this just changed my life or changed their life or changed both our lives, right?
Oh gosh. I love, that's one thing I really love about this job. I love getting the customer feedback. You know, working in telecommunications previously, you know, feedback was sometimes mixed, I'll be honest. But here we get so much great feedback. I'm thinking of, for example, an email I received a while back that was somebody had purchased some books to actually send to an orphanage in Africa. I think they were Swahili English books. And she emailed me back and she sent pictures and said, you know, these are their favorite books in the in their little library, and it's so great because they can read it in their language, but they're also picking up some English. And you know, whenever I get that kind of feedback from teachers or people who are seeing the end user, another one that was it was really meaningful to me personally was we had done something a little while ago with this whole refugee crisis. You know, and we're all reading the heartbreaking stories and the refugee camps and the kids who are traumatized. And I was able to work with an organization called the School Box Project. And I hadn't heard of them before, but what they were doing was they were establishing camps or let's say tents in some of these refugee camps in Greece and other areas. And the tents were sort of like safe havens for the kids. And so the kids could go there and they had art project, you know, artwork that they could do. They had some counselors there. And I mean, some of these kids were truly, truly traumatized children. I mean, and again, I know that this is a small drop in the bucket of trying to help children who have been traumatized this way, but needless to say, it was a safe space for them to get away from sort of the day-to-day life at those refugee camps, the trauma that they were through, or sometimes express some of that through artwork, etc. So they had some educators there as well, and we worked with another company as well to send a bunch of bilingual books, and they also sent back some pictures where they had used these books to help the kids draw art. So we have, for example, this one really colorful book, Walking Through the Jungle, and I'm just remembering the image of, you know, kids were taking, sort of copying elements of that in their own pictures, and they were pasting it around, and it was this nice colorful area and desks, and kids, the pictures were like, oh, these are kids doing what kids should be doing, you know, and when you think of what probably much of their life had been before going there, and what much of their life was there, it's just nice to know that that could make some difference. So
yeah, I think we all just take for granted the sense of normalcy that we, you know, we may complain about routine or this or that, but it's just having something calm and safe and normal and also expressive is just golden.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, and you've even taken it a step further with your company, again, with all that you're doing, is that you've woven giving back into the fabric of your company with your Pledge 1%. Do you want to talk about that?
That's just something that's always been important to me since we started this is, you know, I know that I've been lucky. I've been lucky with the education, with the opportunities I've been given. and as a lot of us have been. And so I think that it is incumbent upon all of us to find some way to give back. The needs are endless. You know, I was doing something this weekend with an organization that packs meals for feeding the hungry. You know, there's one opportunity. There's so many opportunities in climate change. You know, there's just the needs are endless. So nobody can say they can't find a way to give back. We have, so our company joined something called Pledge 1%. And the idea behind Pledge 1% is that as a company, even if you're a small company starting out, you're incorporating giving as part of your DNA. And that giving, and you may be starting out, you may have no money. So that giving may not be 1% of profits or income. That giving may be giving product. That may be giving your time. But you're incorporating that, and it may be a mix of some of that. And in our case, it's a mix of those three things. But the idea is that we have giving as sort of part of our corporate culture. We, again, so many needs out there. What do you focus on? And I do get emails almost on a daily basis with people that have needs related to literacy and education and multiculturalism. We obviously have to find a way to get through and figure out, and we have decided that our giving through Pledge 1% would support issues related to education, literacy, multiculturalism. And so one of the organizations that we are strong supporters of is one of your favorite organizations, Room to Read. And what we love about Room to Read is not only, you know, we love the whole mission of building libraries and schools and girls' education and all that, but what we also love and what we thought was a great match with our company is their book publishing program. So their book publishing program, they're actually, it's kind of this idea of don't give a person a fish, teach them to fish. So what they're doing is they're teaching and they're holding workshops for illustrators and for writers to learn, to create books. And then they help them create the books, and they are done in a very economical way, and then they're able to distribute the books in these communities, and the books are in their language, they're representative of their communities. So I just think supporting that, you know, as a publisher and a distributor of books, I think that's a superb match for us. Another one that we really support is something called Multicultural Children's Book Day. And this is, interrupt me if we have to break, but this is a very important one and kind of dear to my heart. We're big sponsors of this thing called Multicultural Children's Book Day. And the idea here is if you look back at about 2013, 2014, about 10% of characters in children's books were non-white, which when you think at this point we're roughly 50% of kids who are identifying as non-white, that's crazy. That's a very small percent. And these kids, and it's very important for kids to be able to see themselves in books, right? And it's also important for kids to learn about others through multicultural books. So part of Multicultural Book Day is to promote this idea of having more publishers put diverse characters in books. And between that, and there's another organization called We Need Diverse Books. There's been a big push for that. And actually, it has increased quite a bit. I think we're almost up to about 30%. I think some research at about 30% of characters. But we just really feel that, you know, it's very important for somebody's self-esteem, for a child, to see themselves represented in books. We think books for say non-minority students to read books about other cultures, you know, it really develops an empathy and understanding. I think empathy is something that is hard to teach. You know, it's not like teaching someone to ride a bike or to cook an egg. Empathy, you really have to show it, you have to inspire it, you have to motivate it, and you have to kind of teach it over time. And I think by reading books from kids who grew, you know, with different perspectives really helps to build empathy and understanding. So I think for those reasons, you kind of talk about the book as a mirror of themselves and a window out into other cultures. They're very important. And then again, just this idea of that learning about these other cultures and understanding and having exposure to other countries is so important. I think there was an article, I don't know how long, but in Fast Company, that was talking about what are, you know, some of the main keys to success. And I think the number one, you know, to success in sort of in your career, in your business, and one of the prime ones was being able to motivate a diverse workforce. I think the second one had to do with being able to communicate with people from diverse cultures. And almost all of them had something to do with being able to accept other thoughts and ideas and accept diversity and listen to people and communicate with diversity. So really, aren't multicultural books doing that? So Multicultural Children's Book Day kind of culminates. It's the last Friday in January, so we just had it. And there are things there, like we have a Twitter party where people talk about issues surrounding diverse books. The organization also gives, I think we've given about 8,000 free books already to schools and libraries, to multicultural books, to schools and libraries. And so we're just, did just a lot of good work that comes out of that. So that's something that's important to us to sponsor.
That's amazing. Well, because I think we need to realize that we one of the guests said at one time, we all are living on this giant rock together, right? And the world just gets smaller and smaller and smaller. So, and communication is always key, regardless of who you are, where you are, what you're doing. And I think they've seen, too, even with companies, if your bottom line improves when you have more diverse opinions and mm-hmm. perspectives, and if you got more women and more people from different cultures and color, and it's a win-win-win. You can't go wrong, right?
Exactly. So, yeah. Exactly. You know, there's a quote I love, Nicole, let me see. I think I printed it out here because it gets to the crux of sort of this idea of the importance of those multicultural books, etc. And it's a quote by somebody, Rudine Sims Bishop. She's actually a professor of education at Ohio State. And if you don't mind, I'll read it. It says, "Books are sometimes windows, offering views of worlds that may be real or imagined, familiar or strange. These windows are also sliding glass doors, and readers have only to walk through in imagination to become part of whatever world has just been created or recreated by the author. When lighting conditions are just right, however, a window can also be a mirror. Literature transforms human experience and reflects it back to us, and in that reflection, we can see our own lives and experiences as part of a larger human experience. Reading, then, becomes a means of self-affirmation, and readers often seek their mirrors in books."
Oh, my gosh.
Gets to the crux of why this is so important. I just love that quote.
Absolutely. It's so moving, and I'm glad you shared that. And we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back.
Oh, folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design. This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, "Well, I'd like her room to be gray." And the little girl said, "Mom, gray is the color of depression."
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
The traffic is stuck. Max Living, brought to you by the Max Challenge of Clinton, New Jersey. Join me, your host, Mark LaRose, every Wednesday at 1 p.m. right here on 100 in Chamber Radio. I'll be discussing important health and fitness subjects, featuring guests and success stories. We are here to help motivate you. It's a beautiful day.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. 100 in Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody right there!
Get into it!
Everybody right there!
Get involved!
Everybody, you!
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on 100 in Chamber Radio. Today, we're talking with Annika Forzani. She is the founder and president of Language Lizard. You can find them on languagelizard.com. And we're on Facebook Live today. You can see Annika talk about all the things that they're doing. It's a company that she started 15 years ago. It's all women. It's incredible, an incredible team, and they're doing incredible work and bilingual multiculturalism diversity for teachers, librarians, classrooms, home libraries. And she mentioned in the last segment that they just pledged 1%. Mm-hmm. And designated Room to Read, my charity of choice, as their partner. And so to celebrate that, we are hosting on March 22nd, which is a Sunday, in Princeton at a little shop called Milk and Cookies. And we're going to be having it's part of the Room to Read New Jersey Book Club. And Annika's going to be our featured author, and she's going to be showcasing her book, Building Bridges, with bilingual books and multicultural resources. So we're going to be there. It's going to be at 12 noon to 2 o'clock at this little shop called Milk and Cookies. And yes, there will be cookies.
And, so very important.
Yeah, it's a very, and it's in Princeton. So it's on Chamber Street, 14 Chamber Street. So it's in Princeton because Annika grew up in Princeton and went to Princeton. And so.
Didn't grow up in Princeton, but yes, I did sort of
You've got roots in Princeton. You've got your folks in Princeton, yes. And roots in Princeton. And Princeton's always just a fun place to go. Anyway, and cookies are fun. And books are fun. So. It's going to be on the Language Lizard Facebook page. It's on the Room to Read page. So if you've got a Sunday noonish afternoon, it's right near Palmer Square too. So it's right near campus. So make a day of it. Come find out to meet Annika in person. And if you're a teacher or a librarian or a resource person or a multicultural person, please join us for that event on March 22nd. So from that, we're going to expand on so that's part of the 15-year celebration.
And yes.
What other things have we got going throughout the year that people can find out about?
Yeah, we have a lot of exciting things planned. Most of them will be, like I said, I really encourage people to sign up for our newsletter. We do not spam people. We don't send too many emails. But we do let you know when we have something exciting and new. As well as we also kind of provide links to some really interesting articles related to literacy and language. So, like I said, we don't send out a lot, but we try to make out what we send is informative. And so this year, like I said, we are planning to offer some brand new languages, which is exciting, some more resources for teachers, some books that are a little bit different than some of the fiction books that we're offering now, that have very multicultural components, and we are going to be offering those also. We're working on lesson plans related to those. So again, things that people are teaching regularly with perhaps a non-multicultural context, now they can teach it, meet those standards still, but do it with a multicultural context. So we are planning some books as well where we are looking for some feedback from teachers. And so I should mention also, we're always looking for feedback. So we do actually have a survey that if people want to just email us through our contact form on our website or at info@languagelizard.com, if there are, for example, languages that you don't see represented on our website that you think there's a great demand for, definitely let us know. Types of books that you're looking for, we really do take into that feedback. And, we do like to hear from our customers or potential customers. So we do have a lot of exciting things planned. Certainly, October is celebrating the Bilingual Child Month, so we're going to have some exciting things then as well. So it's a fun year. It's a fun year.
Well, and I still love the idea of how you turned something fun that you were doing on the side into a whole business that you've grown and it's thriving. And I'm going to give another plug for the April 1st Women's Business Summit that we're having in Clinton at the Holiday Inn, because one of the women for the breakout sessions is going to be, she's going to be like about turning your side hustle into a business and how to write a business plan. Because did you write a business plan, or did you just like be like, go, here I go?
Yeah, no, I did. Yes. And actually the New Jersey Small Business Development Center, which I don't do so much with them now, but starting out, they do provide really good resources. I do have a business background, but certainly it still provided some resource. And for people who maybe have a passion and some great ideas, but maybe with less of a business background, I think they can get a lot of help. They have a lot of different programs there as well.
And what was the hardest part about starting the business that you didn't anticipate, maybe, would you say?
Well, I would say, it's a big country. And when you're a small business and you have limited resources for marketing and getting the word out, and you have so many people you want to reach, I think California now is like 40% are in English homes that speak a language other than English. You know, overall, it's a little over 20%. New Jersey's almost 30%. So there are people who definitely need these resources, and it's just it can be challenging as a small business to get the word out about it. And so, what we often hear from customers who do happen to find us, so we get a lot from word of mouth, obviously. And we do some marketing, but what we often hear from customers who find out about it is, wow, I didn't know I could get books in this language, in these languages, or, oh, I wish I had known about you sooner because I had a student from here or there or the other place, and I didn't know I could give, you know, I really wanted to connect with them with a book, and I didn't know that this was available. So we do really appreciate all the word of mouth. And I'd say that's probably the most challenging part.
And now it's going to go viral on Facebook. That's the series going. All right, well, I'm going to ask you a big question now. What is your superpower?
Oh, what is my superpower?
Because you've got mugs and T-shirts on the side.
Yes, yes. Yes, we have some T-shirts and mugs that says, I'm bilingual. What's your superpower? And I guess my superpower is helping people understand that we are strongest because of our diversity, not in spite of our diversity.
You can put that on a T-shirt.
Yes, and helping people understand that everybody has a story. You just have to listen.
Yes. Yes, I'm going to an event in Princeton next week where I'm part of the whole – it's for International Women's Day, and it's going to be for a seminar on storytelling, telling your story, whether it's
yes.
for your nonprofit, for your business, for yourself, for your life, whatever. But, I mean, stories are what are the crux of who we are and
yeah.
how we learn.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh. All right. Well, yeah. So, again, you can go to languagelizard.com and learn about sign up for the newsletter, sign up for the giveaways, look for lesson plans, look for the book, look for a flyer about the event coming up on March 22nd. There's all kinds of good stuff coming up with Language Lizard. So, any other parting words that you want to share with our audience?
Well, I hope that some of the audience will come join us in Princeton because I really do love getting individual feedback. I'll make sure to bring some of the books as well so people can see it. I mentioned we have an audio resource. I can bring that as well. People like to sometimes see that and see, you know, how it works, that you can just tap on a page and suddenly hear another language.
That's called Pen Pal, right?
Yeah, it's the Pen Pal Audio Recorder Pen. Yes, so you can take a story and listen to it in either of the languages in that book. So that's been really popular and great for teachers to use in centers and even sometimes like kids take home, etc.
That's great. And your tagline is inspiring kids through language. And hopefully through our talk today, we're inspiring, you know, kids and parents and teachers and librarians and inspiring people to learn a language, recognize diversity, and celebrate diversity.
So, I hope so.
Thank you.
Thank you.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise Financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heidi and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Joe Biden celebrating a very super Tuesday as the former VP won at least 9 states, including a surprise victory in the big delegate-rich state of Texas.
People are talking about a revolution. We started a movement. We've increased turnout.
Yeah!
The turnout's turned out for us!
The Democratic race for the White House now seemingly narrowing to Biden and Bernie Sanders. Sanders winning three states on Super Tuesday. He's likely to win Maine as well and is leading in the biggest state of California. Italy is shutting down all of its schools and universities for 2 weeks in an attempt to contain the COVID-19 coronavirus outbreak. There have been about 80 deaths in that country, most located in the northern regions, and they've confirmed over 2,500 cases of the virus. This is USA Radio News.
If you're over the age of 50 and considering buying an annuity in the next 60 days, I have some important news for you. Don't buy an annuity until you understand the pros and cons of annuities. A free book to help you maximize your retirement income from television host and three-time author Josh Melberg has been released. This book reveals little-known truths about annuity strategies in simple-to-understand terms. Grab a pen right now because we are about to offer you this free book that unlocks the five little-known secrets we believe baby boomers and seniors should know before buying an annuity. Call 800-985-1813 now, and you'll receive a free copy of Josh Milberg's book, Next Gen Annuity Strategies Revealed. As a bonus, we'll also send you a copy of The Number One Mistakes Retirees Are Making with Their Investments Today, and a free DVD on how you can get up to 33% more income in retirement. Call 800-985-1813 now. Again, that's 800-985-1813. Employees of J.D. Milberg Financial have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Joe Biden celebrating a very super Tuesday as the former VP won at least 9 states.